A year ago today, four police officers and a transit cop were shot and killed in Dallas. The shooting came following a prayer rally and a night of otherwise peaceful protests in response to the death of two African-American men by police in Louisiana and Minnesota earlier that week. The tragedy in Dallas raised the specter of targeted killings of police officers after episodes of police violence against civilians were increasingly caught on tape. David Brown was the chief of the Dallas police on that night those five officers were killed. After the shooting, he talked about the attacker.
The suspect said he was upset about Black Lives Matter. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings. The suspect said he was upset at white people. The suspect stated he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers.
David Brown led the Dallas Police Department from 2010 to 2016. He's now retired and has a new memoir out. It's titled Call to Rise, A Life in Faithful Service to the Community That Made Me. David Brown spoke to me about police transparency, how tragedy in his own life changed his views of policing, and that night on July 7th that delivered the worst news of his professional career.
If you recall, over the July 4th weekend last year, there was the Alton Sterling shooting and the Philando Castile shooting. And this had reached a boiling point between community and police relationships so that we were all concerned, all the major cities especially, were all concerned about the protests potentially getting violent or, you know, there'd be property damage or people just be so frustrated with what they were seeing in other parts of the country as it relates to police-involved shootings, that it would spill over into other cities that did not experience those types of conflicts with their communities. So we had worked really hard with the protest leadership, and we knew the game plan. We knew what they were planning to do. There was no plans at all in any of the discussions we had in weeks leading up to July 7th of any type of disruption.
You went home that night thinking the protests were pretty much wrapping up. You took off your belt, went home to relax, and then your phone rang. What happened?
Yes. What happened is that the protesters had a scheduled speech, and that ended, and the crowd began to leave. And as they dispersed, I told my second-in-command, hey, just let me know when the last protester leaves. Unbeknownst to me, they spontaneously began to march, and I get a first phone call. The second-in-command, David Pugh, called me out of breath, saying we had an officer down who was what we call low sick, which is grave, and that there was an active shooter and multiple shots fired. And I immediately threw my gun belt back on and headed toward our command center.
Is this your worst nightmare as a chief?
Yes.
Not only one officer down, but multiple?
Yes, because I had been the longest serving chief since the 1940s here in Dallas. And I had not lost an officer in the line of duty. And that was something, as far as a legacy as a police chief, you pray for. And this news that night, and then it was like subsequently there was another officer's down, a fourth officer's down. And so we were, you know, just kind of in shock.
And you talk about the chaos of that night trying to respond to the sniper ultimately that was in a parking garage downtown as the nation watched on live news of this awful situation unfolding. Five officers killed, as we mentioned, and many days later, you spoke at the memorial service for those five fallen cops in front of President Obama and Michelle Obama, in front of President Bush and Laura Bush, and you said in your book that your private grief, not your decades of public service as chief, had best prepared you for that moment. Explain.
I had lost my police partner from the police academy, Walter Williams, 5 years into my career, wanted to quit. Then I lost my brother, younger brother, to a drug dealer killing him. He was addicted to crack cocaine, my younger brother. And then I lost my mentally ill adult son, undiagnosed, bipolar. Had a violent episode and killed two people and had to be killed by officers to prevent him from doing more harm. And so I had more than my fair share of personal grief and had to get through that and still be police chief. Through it all, that day on July 7th, the preparation was I knew exactly what to say to grieving families. I knew how they were feeling because I felt it in every way you can possibly grieve. My instincts kicked in a personal and professional way that just, it really did best prepare me to handle that situation.
Brown lost his police partner early in his career. Then his brother died in a drug-related killing. In 2010, Brown's son DJ was killed by police himself. DJ had adult-onset bipolar disorder, and he was killed after a violent episode where DJ shot and killed one civilian and a local police officer. That tragedy brought new intensity to the need for mental health treatment to David Brown, who says police should not be the first line of response in dealing with individuals with mental illness.
I'm not sure that our society should expect police officers to be able to resolve this. This is about policies and funding, choices we make as public officials and the way we legislate, and maybe a mental health professional or access to mental health professionals much more than we have, and mental health facility capacity is more of a solution, which it costs dollars and it takes a commitment. But I just don't know that handcuffs or the handgun is going to be the solution, because at the end of the day, that's what cops have as a tool. We can talk to people ad nauseum, but at the end of the day, the behavior kind of dictates how the officer is going to react. Someone, you know, acting violently, it springs into action our tactics so that we can stay alive and so we can protect other people.
I want to also talk about the police that you led, the department that you led, and the debate that the country's having about policing now. You talk about 60 officers that you fired for misconduct from the Dallas Police Department during your tenure over the years. And it made me want to ask you about rules for disciplining cops, both within departments, but really in the courtrooms. The nation is watching as police officers either go on trial, but much more frequently get off or are exonerated after a shooting that to most layperson seems egregious. The case of Philando Castile is a prime example. Police claim in court, as you know, that in that moment they have fear for their life that can legally at least justify a shooting. Do these rules need to be changed, that an officer can just claim fear for their life and basically no jury will convict them or no grand jury will indict them?
I think it's worth spending some time here before a yes or no answer on this issue. People want to give cops the benefit of the doubt. They do. And the reason why they want to give them the benefit of the doubt is because they risk their lives every day to protect us. And because they want to give them the benefit of the doubt, and the standard for convicting someone is beyond a reasonable doubt, therein lies your conflict. Even with egregious facts, jurors, you know, they take great consternation with convicting a cop who may have answered hundreds of thousands of calls the right way, and this one, he didn't or she didn't. And it's wrong. The tactics were wrong. Maybe even the motivations were wrong. But those juries are conflicted in convicting them. And I think that's the context of what happens as these cases go through the criminal justice system, is that people are torn and they conflate the cops they know with these cops on trial and say, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's give them. And then you can never get a reason beyond a reasonable doubt standard conviction in these juries. And I'm not so sure that we should throw out our system of justice to get a conviction for that. I think it's downstream where we make the most significant change. And what I mean by that, I think it's at the local level where we screen, hire, and change the standards of how we can get people out that are not suited for the job, because there's a percentage that's just not suited to be a cop. We need to change all the processes in place that create barriers to get those people out of the profession.
You know, you're a cop, you were the boss, you're also a black man in America, and you say that diversity hiring in police departments for diversity's sake solves nothing, but that you do see it as a tool for effective policing. Do you see hiring of more minorities, more African Americans or other minorities, connected to the problem of police-involved shooting?
Yes, and we got to be a little bit more strategic than we've been. I think hiring more people of color from urban centers to police urban centers, there's a unique issue in our urban centers here, in our inner cities. I grew up an inner city kid. It's a different conversation, different culture, different type of interactions. There's really entrenched poverty, generational poverty. And there's so many things that an officer can do and say to escalate things to violence, or so many things they can do and say to de-escalate things in these environments, that we need to be strategic in how we hire. And that may not always relate back to color. there's a lot of white cops that do a better job in the black community than some black cops do.
How much do we really know about where the problem is with police and minorities, police and African Americans, and whether African Americans are more likely to face the bad end of a police weapon when they have an interaction with a cop?
Well, I will point you toward Dallas's release when I was chief a couple of years ago of 12 years of police-involved shooting and excessive force data. And then there's been studies from Dallas's data that shows that race has not been something that has been intricate in deciding the outcome. But I will say perceptions mean everything in this particular case, especially when you see it on video. At the same time, you know, many of these incidents are caught on video and still not yielding the right outcomes. If you don't have the video, you have one person's word against another person's word. And what people in the community are saying, particularly in the communities of color, is the video just revealing what we've been saying for decades. So I'm 100% for body cams and more video, cell phones, whether it's personal on the side of the road shooting a video. Transparency is always the better way.
The book is called To Rise by former Dallas Police Chief David O'Brown. Chief, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Todd.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.